Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. I'm your host, Robert Winfrey. Thank everyone for being here. We got a relatively straightforward show this evening. Just going to be talking about last night, UFC Fight Night 108. I don't believe there were any major news points to come out before or after, and we'll touch on a few of the, you know, any of the major news items. Mostly I think that's going to be it for this particular show, unless there's something on your mind. If you've got a question or a comment, something along those lines, feel free to call in. The number is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. I believe Jeff is busy this evening. At any rate, he's not here just yet, so we'll see if he calls in. You know, he's always welcome. But in the interim, it's just me, and we're just going to go ahead and jump straight into this one. Last night, the UFC returned to Nashville, Tennessee, with UFC Fight Night 108. It was, it was a card. I mean, you know, Mark Radlich, who used to host the show and also do coverage before I did. And in many ways, better than I was. Not all, but there's a few ways he was better. Learn from him in those respects. But he has a saying that, you know, of all the shows, of all the cards I've seen, of all the movies I've watched, of all the whatever, that was certainly one of them. That's about what I took away from Fight Night 108. High points and low points. Again, both good and bad. All right, main event. Cub Swanson defeats Artem Lobov via unanimous decision. 249-46, 150-45. I was 50-45. I don't believe that is necessarily accurate. Upon further reflection and review, I think Lobov should have won the first round. So four rounds to one being 49-46. He's probably the more accurate score. I was disappointed in Cub Swanson in this fight. I mean, look, Artem Lobov sucks. I mean, I say that and I don't mean it in the sense that he is like the worst fighter in the world. He's not the worst fighter in the world. Excuse me. He's on the lower end of the UFC side, and I tend to fall into the camp that believes that after his first two UFC fights, that's the loss in the tough finale to Ryan Hall and then being beaten by Alex White, both of which he lost decisively. If he was not friends with Conor McGregor, he would have been cut, and no one would have cared. Now, does that mean he's unable to improve or, you know, completely undeserving of a spot in the UFC? Based purely on skill, it's a margin call. But the UFC does need to draw interest, and Artem Lobov has a significant following in the across various European countries, and is Conor McGregor's friend, so maybe you keep him around where you wouldn't elsewise. I mean, look, the fact after those two losses, his first UFC win was over a guy who was not UFC caliber. There is no way to say that. Chris Avila had less than 10 fights, I believe, and was brought in to fight Lobov at UFC 20. Which one was it? I will find out specifically. Hang on.
That is weird.
Anyway, it was Chris Avila at UFC 202. And Avila was brought in just because he trains with the Diaz brothers. And they wanted to further that narrative of, you know, Conor versus Nate for the main. Again, they brought in a guy who was not ready to be in the UFC to fight Artem Lobov. And Lobov beat him. So, you know, good for him. Then he beat Taruto Ishihara. Ishihara's position in the UFC is a tad dubious as well. He went to a draw with Mizuto Hirota at that Road to the Octagon show. Stuck around, won a couple of fights. But, again, lower end of the spectrum as far as the UFC goes. And that then brings us to, again, so again, when I say Lobov sucks, I don't necessarily mean he's the worst fighter in the UFC. He might be pretty close to it. And I hate to be sexist and phrase it this way, but he's certainly among the worst male fighters in the UFC. And there was a women's fight on this card that was just atrocious. And again, I think anyone else in his in the exact same position he's in would not be with the UFC right now. Whether, you know, how you choose to feel about that and whatnot is entirely up to you after the fact. But I don't think he's UFC. He's a marginal UFC caliber fighter. And he was put in this position to main event against Cub Swanson. You know, was there any harm in it necessarily? No, not really. But Lobov is an extraordinarily limited fighter. He does one thing. He walks forward and he swings at you with these kind of clubbing clotheslines. And he tries to suck you into a brawl, and then he hopes to tag you on the chin and win the fight. I mean, for all the talk of his power, he has less Dominic Cruz, all right, long criticized for his, you know, lack of finishing ability, has more TKO wins than Artem Lobov does. Let that sink in for a minute. This guy is, yeah, I mean, I don't care if he knocked out a few guys on the regional circuit. I don't care about what he did in the Tough House, because no one should care about that show. But on, you know, in the UFC and in practical competition against fighters of his caliber or better, he's lucky to get decisions. And Cub Swanson, the fourth best featherweight in the world, could be in line for a title shot. Went the distance with him. Now, again, I was mostly disappointed with Swanson because there was a clear advantage for him on the mat. He was, in the second round, he demonstrably the better grappler, right? And I understand Cub Swanson is not a wrestler necessarily by trade. And you don't want to go too far outside of your wheelhouse against a guy who has, you know, some power. Maybe fatigue set in a little bit. I don't know the whole thing. But that was a clear area where he was superior. And he didn't do a whole lot to force the fight into that area where he was at max, where not only was he maybe at his maximum potential to win, but Lobov was at his lowest potential to win. My friend Pat Mullen, who used to be on the show and, you know, still comes in from time to time, articulated very well that sometimes the best way to win a fight is not to fight where you have the best chance to win, but to fight where your opponent has the least chance to win. It's one of the things that Demetrius Johnson does so well. He doesn't just fight where he is the best. He fights where you are the worst. If you're a poor striker, he's going to force you to strike with him. If you're a poor clinch fighter, he's going to force you to fight him there. Wherever you are at your worst is where he can force the fight. Artem Lobov is not a good grappler. Constantly, again, every time they went to the mat together, Swanson was superior. Even the brief times when Lobov was on top, he wasn't doing anything. And Swanson didn't really try to exploit that to the fullest advantage I felt he could have. Beyond that, I mean, it was a fine. It was just kind of what Cub Swanson does. You know, landed a lot of good straight rights. Artem Lobov, you know, again, whatever else you want to say about his technique and ability, he's got a heck of a chin. Because he got punched in the face repeatedly. He got kicked in the head a couple of times. And he took some damage. Pretty serious damage. And I don't think it did more than wobble him a couple of times. Again, whatever else you want to say about him, he's got a heck of a chin. Which is, again, the Homer Simpson qualification for fighting, but it is something that deserves noting. And Lobov landed a few good blows here or there. He had a really good leg kick game going for the first couple of rounds. I was really surprised he got away from it as the fight went on, because anybody who moves a lot, any fighter who moves a lot, and Swanson is one of those guys, but also on, you know, within that discussion, Dominic Cruz, Demetrius Johnson, TJ Dillashaw, any very mobile fighter who uses a lot of movement, they are susceptible to leg kicks, and leg kicks that'll break them out of their stance at times. It's a weapon that can be used against them. And Lobov kind of got away from that for reasons that are not necessarily clear. But again, he hung tough for five rounds. He's got a good chin. You know, am I offended that Lobov got a main card slot? I was a little bit surprised by it. I don't think offended is the right word. And he's going to stick around in the UFC as well. You know what? Again, a lot of this is, in many cases, no harm, no foul, you know? Does he deserve the main event slot based on his popularity, the location of the fight, his record, his tenure in the UFC, so on and so forth? Probably not. But, again, was there any real harm done here? Because, you know, the right guy won. The fight wasn't bad. And, again, I don't want to see these fights like this all that often. I really don't. But in this instance, I mean, I'm much more annoyed by Betch Kohea and Holly Holm headlining a card than I am necessarily by headlining that card than necessarily this one. Because Holly's on that, you know, three-fight losing streak, and Kohea, I think she might have one win, but she had a couple of tough losses in a row, and I'm also just, like, not at all a believer in Betch Kohea's skills at this point, and Holly Holm is just too many years and miles. Not looking forward to that one almost at all. But, you know, Swanson got a good win. That's, I think, four in a row for him, maybe five. Four in a row. He's beaten Hakran Diaz, Tatsuya Kawajiri, that great war with Duho Choi, and then here against Artem Lobov. He said he wants a title shot next. I'm not opposed to that. I mean, look, he was finished by Jose Aldo in the WEC with that beautiful flying double knee strike. Still one of the best knockouts in the sport. Aldo's finish with Swanson. He was finished by Frankie Edgar, neck crank, late in the fifth round, and Max Holloway submitted him in the third. So he's lost to the best guys, right? Decisively. But I wouldn't hate a rematch necessarily as far as any of those guys go. And, I mean, the other option is Frankie Edgar, because Frank Edgar's going to fight Yair Rodriguez at UFC 211. Frankie only has a shot if Max Holloway wins, because if Aldo beats Max Holloway, and wouldn't shock me if he does, Jose Aldo might have an annoying personality, and not a lot of you might be fans, and that's fine and dandy. He's still a tremendous fighter. Edgar's not getting a third fight with Aldo, not after losing twice, comprehensively losing twice, especially that second fight. That was a clinic by Aldo in many respects. If Holloway wins, you can go Edgar and Holloway as a fresh matchup. Other than that, Swanson's the most viable contender. So I'm not sure exactly which way things will go. The result of, you know, a couple of fights are going to play into this, but if they do go with Swanson, I'm not opposed to it. I mean, he's been around forever. He's fought pretty much everybody. He wins more often than not. And again, his only losses have been to the very best. His only UFC losses are to Ricardo Lamas, Frankie Edgar, and Max Holloway, I think. Might be one more in there. No, Lamas, Edgar, and Holloway, that's it. I mean, earlier he had the loss to Jose Aldo, and then he lost to Chad Mendes. Both of those were WEC fights. I mean, this is a guy who doesn't lose to just anybody. So if they do go with, again, any of those rematches for Swanson for the belt, I don't hate it. I don't give him much of a chance, but he's earned the right to fight for the belt. So, okay, that Artem Lobov should be back on the preliminary card, unless they're a fight night in Europe where he can main card. That's about all I've got for that one. Again, not a bad fight, all things considered. So, not complaining too much about that. All right, co-main event. Ooh, buddy. Al Iaquinta knocked the stupid out of Diego Sanchez in the first round. I picked Al Iaquinta to win. Quinta, sorry, I forget which way he prefers it pronounced. Look, Diego Sanchez is just... I want to talk about him in a second. Iaquinta just avoided the rushes of Sanchez. The fight was only like less than 100 seconds long. It was a minute 38 into the first round. So 98 seconds. Landed a beautiful straight right. Dropped Sanchez. Sanchez got up, put on a mean face, and tried to throw back. Iaquinta slipped a punch, landed another right, dropped Sanchez. He was unconscious. One more hammer fist. That's it. That's the first straight-up knockout loss of Diego Sanchez's career. He's only been stopped by strikes twice. He had one TKO loss to BJ Penn, but that was cut-related. Penn opened up that like axe cut on his forehead with that high kick. Then Lozon stopped him with strikes at UFC 200. Now Iaquinta knocks him out cold. You know, good old Raging Al there. He got a laugh out of me at the post-fight interview when Brian Stann asked, "So you've been gone for a while, but you looked great. You didn't take damage. Who do you want next?" And he kind of ignored the question to go, "You know, I'm making a living selling houses now. So if you need to buy a house or you're selling one, hit me up." Which is true, but for you who didn't keep track of why Al Iaquinta hadn't fought in two years. It was really a contract dispute with the UFC, and because he needed money, he got his real estate license in Long Island. He's a real estate agent. Actually, you know, there's like, you know, bus stop benches that have his face on them and the number, you know, the cheesy grin. You know, if you're buying or selling a house, call Raging Al. He'll fight for you. I don't know what the exact catchphrase is there, but the man's making a living as a real estate agent, so, you know, good for him. I mean, fighting's a limited thing anyway. You should always have an exit plan, so. Good for him, but hearing, you know, guy comes in, knocks out Diego Sanchez, has 5 wins in a row. I mean, the last one was a clucky decision, but the other ones before that were legit. And, you know, so who do you want next? Pretty standard question. His response is to pimp his outside business that he will now probably get fined for because he wasn't buying the ad time. All right. Oh, I believe this is Jeff calling in. Let me double check that. Hey, Jeff, how you doing this evening?
I'm just like a zero to hero in no time flat. Just like that.
Oh, Todd Grisham, you goofball.
Yes,
I already talked.
Robert, sorry I'm a little late, but yeah, let's get to it.
Yeah, don't worry. Yeah, I already said my piece about the main event, so I'll give you the floor to talk about it. Cub Swanson's unanimous decision win over Artem Lobov.
Was it surprised the fight went 5 rounds? I guess I feel like Swanson allowed the fight to be a little more competitive than it needed to be. I'm not surprised that Lobov, you know, won that first. Swanson tends to be a bit of a slow starter anyway. I just feel like he gave Lobov a few too many openings at times, even though he dominated most of the fight. And it was a very dangerous fight, I mean, even though you don't have a very high opinion of Artem Lobov. I just feel like Artem Lobov, his ground game is so terrible. I feel the takedowns were there, and he could have maybe finished them on the ground, even though Swanson tends to be more of a, you know, stand and bang type fighter. But that's just my opinion. I'm glad Swanson won. I want to see Swanson fight for the title, and I would have no problem with him fighting for the title at some point. If I were him, I would just wait and see what happens with the next featherweight title fight, even if he lost to both guys and got finished by both guys. I mean, the Aldo fight was a really long time ago, and Swanson has become one of the best fighters on the planet, undeniably, one of the best in the world in his weight class. So I want to see that fight.
All right. And as far as the co-main event goes, again, just Ally Aquinta knocks. I wish I could say he knocked the crazy out of Diego Sanchez, but I have a point I want to make about Sanchez that makes that a joke in poor taste. So
I mean, man, if Ally Aquinta could just get his head in order, the guy is so talented, but he has the personality of a teenager. He's so immature. I don't know how he can sell houses with that personality. He's an emotional baby, and he's got to get that in check, because I feel like he's disconnected from reality, because he is one of the better fighters on the planet. And look, he was away from fighting for 2 years. All right, you had a fight with Diego Sanchez. At lightweight, if you're a top fighter at lightweight, that fight's as close of a fight as you can get to a gimme fight in the UFC. So he's upset he didn't get a performance of the night bonus. I mean, well, first of all, not everyone can get a bonus, okay? Not everyone's going to get a performance of the night bonus. Second of all, the guy who got the knockout bonus was it was Mike Perry, right?
Yeah.
So it was Mike Perry, and that was Ally Aquinta got a good knockout, but he was a heavy favorite fighting a guy who was unranked, who hasn't really been a relevant contender in, let me see, like, we're talking almost 8 years. And he's getting all pissed and cursing the UFC because he didn't get a knockout bonus. And then he's complaining about how he was punished and disciplined because he asked for time off from the Fighter Summit. He didn't want to go to the Fighter Summit. And then he started posting pictures on Instagram of him at the beach, and he complained about that. I just feel like he's disconnected with reality, and he doesn't – I'm not going to say he's sociopathic, but he's kind of sociopathic a little bit. And I think he needs to get this under control if he wants to continue his fight career, because the dude is not – he is not mentally well, more so than other fighters.
All right. My point I want to make about Diego Sanchez, I mean, look, this is a guy who's been around for a really long time, on the original Ultimate Fighter, and back when that actually mattered. He's been with the UFC for
12 years. Oh,
how many years? He debuted
the first
at
Ultimate Fighter was 2005. He debuted
He actually debuted in the UFC at UFC 54 back in 2005. No, wait, sorry.
No.
Yeah, the Kenny Florian won in 5.
April 2005. That was the Florian finale.
So,
in
12 years, guy's been fighting.
Yeah.
And if you look at his...
No, he's been fighting longer.
He's been fighting in the UFC for 12 years.
Yeah.
Sorry, my apologies.
Yeah.
And if you look at his body of work... There's a lot of wars. There's a lot of... Even when he was, you know, on his big winning streak, you know, both times, even when he was looking good, he got into these serious back-and-forth blood-and-guts brawls. And he's finally getting finished now. He's, you know, an older guy as far as fighting goes. I'm not saying he has to retire immediately, but there's two major things, if he wants to continue fighting, that have to be looked at seriously. One is his level of opposition. If you want to book Diego Sanchez, there's a serious, you know, ethical responsibility in many ways to not put him in there against elite-level fighters. Now, it's lightweight.
His last fight was Marcin Held, so there you go.
Yeah, I mean, that, and I was okay with that matchmaking. You know, that he's got to be fighting guys well outside the top 15.
Okay, but you say that, but last year he beat Jim Miller.
And Jim Miller's well outside the top 15 as well. I love Jim Miller, but...
Are you sure about that?
Relatively. I don't think he's ranked
at
the moment.
Right now he is. Correct.
And he,
I don't think
he was at the time either. But, again, you have to be very careful with that. And he does, I think, need to retire within his next, like, 4 to 5 fights. He's taken... He has taken so much damage. He needs an exit strategy. Because I really... I mean, I almost hate to say this, but the amount of concussive blows he has taken to the head and some of his personality quirks, if the UFC is going to have a Chris Benoit moment, it's going to come from Diego Sanchez. I don't want that. I'm not... Again, that was a terrible, terrible thing.
He was already a sort of an odd dude before all the... Before all the knockouts, too, though.
Yeah, I know. My point here is that you want to avoid that for every reason imaginable.
I agree.
And Diego Sanchez might be going down that path.
For a number of fighters, we might already be at that point, but...
Also true.
Look, it's tough when fighters get to this point, and some fighters are good enough to... To know when, you know, when their time is up, and when, even though they're still competitive, that it's a good time to step away. Some have to be forced out of it, kind of like Chuck Liddell. But even then, they're still not wanting to give it up. I think even Dan Henderson, Robert, I think fought a few more times than he probably should have, and took a few more knockouts than he should have. And even if he almost defeated Michael Bisping for the title in his last fight.
Technically speaking, Hector Lombard knocked him out. If you watch that fight, he goes limp a couple of times. He just recovers. But that's still enough force to render him unconscious.
Honestly, Hector Lombard, I think, could be at a similar point in his career as well.
Yeah, that's also true. And there's a lot of miles on that guy.
But yeah, I agree. That I want to say we're going to definitively get a Chris Benoit situation here, but yeah, I think you got to look at it. And you know what? I think the UFC should figure out ways to help fighters when they get to this point as well, and give them something. I'm not saying give them like retirement money, but help them form exit plans and things. I don't know. I mean, I think there are things like that at the fighter summits, and just sort of ways to help them plan, you know, do their financial planning and saving money. But maybe there could be a more proactive way to help a guy like, you know, a guy like Diego Sanchez, who has done a lot for the company, who has fought for the company as long as he has, and represented the company generally fairly well. You know, help him out in some ways. But we'll see.
Yeah. All right, next up.
Something like, I think a good example, I'm sorry, like Eve Edwards. Eve Edwards, he's a regular fixture of Fox Sports, and he's a regular UFC analyst now. More things like that is what I would like to see. Go ahead.
Next up, Ovince St. Preux defeated Marcos Rogério de Lima via Von Flute choke in the second round.
The only man to get two Von Flute choke submissions in the UFC.
Which, that
love.
Shouldn't happen. That, well,
it
this is one of
those happen,
things that,
but it did.
Yeah, I mean, the only guys in the guys who give up that choke are the same types who will get submitted by an Ezekiel choke when you have the other guy mounted. There is a serious deficiency in your grappling game to the point where I question whether or not you should be fighting at that level.
I mean,
give Krylov a bit of a pass.
I give Krylov
a bit of a pass. He was like 20 when it happened.
Okay.
And again, young fighters get caught in awkward positions. It happens. All right. I'm not saying that necessarily. You know, it means you're a terrible, terrible fighter. It means that maybe you're not UFC caliber.
Maybe you just don't respect the skill level of Ovince St. Preux.
I respect the skill level of Ovince St. Preux. That is not a choke. That the Von Flue choke is not a choke you should ever be caught in if you know what you're doing. Just straight up, because it requires you to make at least four major errors in a row that you should always see coming.
Unless you've actually been in a fight, in a combat sports situation, I don't know how you can actually say that, honestly.
Because people who have say it. This isn't just me.
Who has said that? All right. I know Vinny Magalhaes has said that, but, I mean, who really cares about what he has to say?
In a purely grappling standpoint, he's an exceptional grappler. I mean,
an exceptional grappler, but look how he did in MMA. Grappling is not the same as MMA, Robert, because there are so many other variables.
I know, and there are certain techniques that actually work better in MMA that a lot of more straight grapplers don't necessarily get. But a Von Flue choke is not something you should ever give up. I mean, it boggles my mind. You want to avoid being hit with a Von Flue choke? There's a real easy way to do it. Don't wrap your opponent's head when they're outside of full guard. That's it. If you're holding it and they pass to half guard, let it go. That is literally all you have to do to avoid this choke. The sum total of what is required of you from a defensive position to avoid being hit with a Von Flue choke
is
to let go
of
a guillotine position.
What if his opponent was weakened to a level where that's ultimately what had to happen?
I still don't think you should give up that choke. I mean, I this is the other thing about, MMA grappling versus straight grappling. You get punched in the face a few times, your brains get rattled, you get bloody, things go out the window a little bit. And that's why you see so many arm bars in MMA. That's why you see so many triangle chokes. Those are not techniques that you give up if you know what you're doing necessarily. But the more physical peril you're put in, the more choices you have to make. I mean, again, Wilson Hayes is never going to give up an arm bar in a jiu-jitsu tournament. But Demetrius Johnson batters him for 3.5 rounds, bloodies him up, things change. I understand that.
Okay.
This is just such an easy choke to avoid. I mean, and would he have won had he not given it up? No, he was done. He's a one-round wonder at the best of times. But if you're giving up that choke, you need to seriously reevaluate your grappling training. That is not something at the UFC level that should be given up.
I just don't think you have enough respect for Ovince St. Preux. To say what you want about Ovince St. Preux, I mean, the man is an experienced fighter at this point. He's had quite a few victories in the UFC and Strikeforce. At one point, he knocked out Shogun Hua, and Shogun Hua is kind of resurging right now. He beat a former Strikeforce light heavyweight champion. He submitted Nikita Krylov, who is a good fighter, even though he's not in the UFC anymore. And I just think you should respect the skill level a little bit.
I
more
do.
That you're
I mean,
not
look,
doing.
There's a lot of people who wouldn't even try what he was doing. I mean, he came back from a tough first round against an overmatched opponent, and he finished him. I give him all the credit in the world for that.
He has 8 wins in the UFC against some tough competition. De Lima, not a world beater, not an elite fighter, but he had a winning record in the UFC as well. And considering that coming off 3 straight losses, this was a do-or-die situation for Ovince St. Preux, Robert. So
yep.
I think you need to respect his skill level, that he can be a guy who now has 2 Von Flue chokes to his record in the UFC, and I think that deserves a little more respect than you're willing to give.
Again, it's just not a choke that you should get at this level. That's really all there is to that.
I disagree.
It's so easy to defend. The same reason you shouldn't get Ezekiel choked.
I'll put you in a Von Flute choke, and we'll see how you feel about that. How about that?
I'm just, it's not, you couldn't put me in a Von Flute choke because I know how to avoid it.
I could. I bet I could.
The only way to do that is, it's a way to capitalize on your opponent being stupid, is primarily what that choke is.
Okay.
And you should never, again, at the elite level in MMA, you should never see that choke. You can threaten, let me rephrase, you should never see that choke finished. You can threaten guys with it, and if they're, and they, but everyone should know how to avoid that. The same way you should know how to avoid an Ezekiel choke. These are not these are not the most difficult things in the world to avoid. And if you're getting caught with them, I would begin to question whether or not you're a UFC caliber fighter.
So, Ovince St. Preux isn't UFC caliber, is what you're saying?
No. No. Hang on. De Lima is not UFC caliber.
Okay.
If your opponent's dumb enough to give that to you and you know how to take it, I applaud that. I absolutely applaud that.
But it almost feels like you're suggesting for, you know, it's so, like, someone shouldn't even attempt it because it's so easy to get out of, is almost what it sounds like you're saying.
No, I apologize if that's what that came across as. What I'm saying is you should never let yourself get caught in it because you have to be essentially complicit in the technique. If OSP, credit to him.
Who knows how many more fights DeLima will have in the UFC, and he also missed weight for this fight.
Hopefully
so
none.
We'll see.
That's his second time missing weight at light heavyweight. I mean, even that division.
Yeah.
And he's been a 500 fighter, I think, in the UFC now. He's like,
no, he's
what,
four and three. I think 4-3, but close.
He's a completely expendable fighter.
Yeah, I would agree, even at light heavyweight.
I mean, and maybe he can get better and come back. That's fine. I mean, look, Sage Northcutt got caught in a variation of the that weird, like, part Von Flue, part arm triangle choke. Good fighters have been caught in weird submissions. I'm not necessarily opposed to that in practice. But if you're as far along as De Lima is in your career, that is not something that should happen to you.
Here's what I'm feeling next for St. Preux. I'm thinking maybe a guy like Eli or Lee Tisi.
I'd be
like
okay
that.
With that. I would be okay with that. That's an interesting fight.
That's,
I mean, Latifi's. Yeah, they haven't fought yet, and I mean, it's light heavyweight at this point. I'm just.
He's never even going to get to an Anthony Johnson level. This is kind of the level I see him at. I see him be a perennial kind of top 10 guy. He'll get close to the top 5, but he'll never get that extra step where, he's a legit contender.
I mean, he's
no
Volkan Uzdemir. God, that kills me.
Well, that was an awful fight.
It was an awful fight, but I laugh because I think Uzdemir is ranked like number 5, right?
It's just that St. Preux, when he fights elite competition, the talent gap is just so wide for him. Even when he fought Usasi back in Strikeforce. So it's just tough for him to close that gap. Unless they fight that type of fight. I mean, look, we saw it with Ryan Bader. His best win was a really aging and declining Shogun Hua. And that was the biggest win of his career. But even after that, he was given, he got committed by Teixeira. He got gifted a fight with Jon Jones. We saw how that went. Got knocked out by Manoa. And then this is kind of the level where he is. And you know what? Considering how gutted the light heavyweight division is, this might be, if he's renegotiating right now, he might not be in a great position, but he might be in a good position to renegotiate. Because of how chaotic light heavyweight is. And it is chaotic.
I mean, I almost would question the sanity of, you know, the UFC brass if they're letting – I mean, you already let both Phil Davis, Ryan Bader go, two proven top 10 light heavyweights. You didn't re-sign Nikita Krylov.
Those guys were top five when they left.
Yeah. Now, Bader was clearly top five when he left. You don't re-sign Nikita Krylov. If you let, someone like OSP go, I mean, what are you doing? What are you doing with that division at this point?
Not just that, Anthony Johnson just retired, Robert.
Also true. I mean, you're nearly at a point where you'd be better off abolishing the division for 3 years. In terms of just talent, half of you go up, half of you go down.
Cormier is good now, but he's 38 years old. And he already had trouble making weight for his last fight. Who knows how many fights Cormier might have left in it?
Yeah, the division is just, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. Speaking of a division that is not a mess, bantamweight, pretty solid division. John Dodson, Eddie Wineland via unanimous decision, 230-27s, 129-28. I cannot for the life of me figure out which round Eddie Wineland would have won.
I don't know. The thing is, I think maybe the first round, because they weren't huge. They weren't like huge 10-8, 10-9s, honestly. Some of them, and the fight looked awkward. It looked and felt awkward. I don't think that's undeniable.
No, I mean, this is not a terribly good fight. It's a really interesting case study in appropriate speed and movement and angles from Dodson.
Yeah, and Dodson had that. I clearly scored the fight for him, but it wasn't. There weren't a lot of big moments, you know, other than like, yeah, it looked like Dodson was, you know, using his movement and angles very well. He out-techniqued Wineland, but he out-pointed Wineland. It was a point game. And that's kind of why it looked weird. He was out-pointing him.
I understand a lot of people not being interested in that fight and some of the, you know, dislike it got. And not how I felt about it, but I understand other people, you know, I understand the perspective of, you know, not being interested in that fight. But, you know, good win for Dodson.
It was a good win for Dodson, yeah.
I'm not sure who he fights next. You know, I wouldn't hate him fighting Thomas Almeida. I don't know how viable that is, but I think he would provide the kinds of problems that Almeida needs to know how to answer if he's going to advance. And both guys, I mean, those two both, you know, bring a significant amount of power into the cage.
I like that fight. That's a good test for Almeida as well.
All right. Yeah, and Eddie Wineland, you know, just about, again, that whole fight went about like everyone expected it to. We had an interesting fight here. I want to yell about the scoring a little bit. At lightweight, Stevie Ray defeats Joe Lozon via majority decision. 29-27, 28-27, and one 28-28 draw. I had this fight 28-27. I take serious issue with 29-27. Because 29-27 for Stevie Ray indicates in this instance that you gave Stevie Ray a 10-8 third round, which I did, and I think is accurate. But you did not give Joe Lozon a 10-8 first round, which I think is just stupid. That first round was a clear 10-8. I mean, that was almost an academic 10-8. Like, if you're training judges, okay, we're going to see how you score rounds and whether or not you are baseline competent. Round one of Joe Lozon versus Stevie Ray, what score do you arrive at? Anything other than 10-8 for Lozon means you should not be judging fights. And yet one judge did that, but hey, surprise. I thought it was a math error. Honestly, that's what I thought when they announced it, like somebody added wrong. But no, some moron just gave Lozon a 10-9 first. Again, 10-8 first round for Lozon. He caught a kick from Ray, took him down, and just abused him on the mat. Positional dominance, elbows from hell. Again, 10-8 round. He dominated that entire round. Ray comes back. Lozon gasses.
Jeff Mullen gave the first round 10-9 to Lozon, just so everyone knows.
do not let that man judge fights. He is
also,
clearly not.
Also, over half the media scored the fight for Ray, 28-27.
Okay, well, it's nice to know that people are starting to figure out, you know, how 10-8s work in practice a little bit better. That it's not because the third round I felt was 10-8 for Ray. I don't think Lozon landed more than about four or five blows. He had one takedown that meant nothing. It was a round decisively won by Stevie Ray by a significant margin. To me, that's a 10-8 round.
The thing is, judges don't like to give out 10. They don't like to give out 10-8s. They just don't.
And I suppose my big gripe there, my biggest gripe there would be if you didn't give Lozon a 10-8 first, A, you're an idiot, and B, you at that point cannot with any degree of internal consistency give Stevie Ray a 10-8 third round.
I mean, he did almost finish. He got almost finished Stevie Ray in the first round. He got really close. He almost got a choke, right?
The choke wasn't that close, but it was close enough.
I feel.
The whole round.
But the whole round, it was close enough, and he was so dominant in that round. See, that's a, even if it's a marginal 10-8, it's still a 10-8, and that's the problem. To me, there should be really obvious 10-8s, and maybe there should be marginal 10-8s too. Don't you think?
Yeah. No, and that's kind of where I was with the third, actually, like up until that final flurry from Ray, which, you know, if that flurry goes on another 5 to 10 seconds, that fight's maybe stopped. At that point,
right,
it was just, you know, Lozon did almost nothing. Again, the first round, I feel, is a clear 10-8 for Lozon, and I felt the third, again, I gave it 10-8 to Stevie Ray, but it's, in some ways, it was close enough to be kind of a margin call. And in that case, if you arrived at 28-28, a draw, I don't think that's necessarily wrong.
Well, a number of less than half, but a number of cage side media did score it a draw as well. Wrestling Observer, Bloody Elbow, MMA Mania, and Sure Dog all scored it a 28-28 draw. Interestingly enough, MMA Junkie scored it for Lozon, 29-27, which is a bit odd, but there you go.
How in the world did you... Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to yell at the math about that. I mean, this was a good fight. Again, you have Lozon completely dominant in round one, but he gasses. Ray comes back, gets his feet back under him in the second.
I assume they gave Lozon the second round is how they arrived at that conclusion.
It would have to be something like that, which is even more silly. But
Lozon's problem is that he's not good past the first round, really. Except against Jamie Varner.
Well, Lozon has had the most uneven career in terms of performances of anyone I can think of.
It's true.
Sometimes, you know, he just blows you out in the first round.
Right.
So then, you know, his next fight, he'll have a great first round, but then gas out. The fight after that, he won't gas. He'll actually be there for all three rounds, but his technique will abandon him and he'll lose a decision. I mean, his career has been all over the place, and it's been entertaining to watch at times, but this was an instance of, you know, again, he put so much out that first round that he was just done after that, and Stevie Ray just...
I think that's part of why Lozon is such, why he's in so many exciting fights, but that's also why he's a 27-13 fighter. In his,
yeah,
after the, you know, his whole UFC career.
Yeah, it's just so uneven. I mean, again, entertaining to watch, but very uneven. You know, big, big win for Stevie Ray there, who's only lost once in the UFC. He's, what, 5-1 now?
Alan Patrick, and that was last year.
Yeah, he's got a decent record. He has a solid record. I mean, he might be ready for, you know, a 12 to 15 ranked guy.
Or give him a Jim Miller type if you want to give him another veteran.
Yeah, I'd be okay with that.
Or if you want to give him like a Magomedov, I don't know. Or Evan Dunham. He's going to need.
Yeah,
a fight
Dunham's
soon,
still
I think.
Around.
Dunham's
there's plenty of things to match him up, but Yeah,
Dunham's won his last four. He's like,
yeah,
reserved.
Dunham's on a bit of a roll. Good for him.
Let me see. I don't think Dunham has a fight lined up. That might be a good fight for both guys.
Yeah, I'm down for that. Again, Stevie Ray is quickly becoming someone I'm paying a lot of attention to. All right, and kicking off the main card, Platinum Mike Perry. Good grief. Knocks out Jake Ellenberger in the second round with a standing elbow.
He put him to sleep, man.
I was worried. That was scary. I mean, he knocks Jake Ellenberger out with a standing elbow. Ellenberger flops backwards like you do when you're unconscious. Ellenberger was out, was down flat on the mat until a little bit after they when they announced the decision. And, you know, they raised Mike Perry's hand and Brian Stan came in for the interview. Up until I think Stan got up next to Perry, Ellenberger was still down on the canvas. I mean, that's a scary knockout. That was... I mean,
not
it's
surprising, though.
It's not surprising. I think we all predicted that Perry would win, but... I mean, again, that's another knockout of the year contender.
It's very rare to see someone throw, like, an elbow straight up in front like that and actually stop someone with it. It's very hard to use an offensive elbow in that way. And you know, because some guys will use those elbows, like, in the clinch or on break. But he just kind of threw it almost like you throw a punch. I've seen Anderson Silva do, I think, before he started his UFC career. And it was just mind-blowing because it's very rare. It's just very rare to see an elbow used like that. I've seen Kenny Florian do that, but
Weidman, it kind of reminded me. I mean, the setup was a little bit different, but, you know, Weidman's over Munoz.
Right. It's just rare. It's rare. It's rare to see
A
standing elbow strike like that.
Especially one that just puts someone out. That's only like the second one, I think. That's straight up
one shot, you're out. Man, that was stunning.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I'm my personal like knockout of the year list. It's that and Edson Barboza's flying knee against Dariush are like my top two at the moment.
Well, like I said, alas, poor Ellenberger, we hardly knew you.
Oh man, I really.
Even you feel sorry for Ellenberger after that, and you don't even like him.
Hey, I may not like him as a fighter, but that doesn't mean I want to see him knocked out necessarily. You know, not like that.
Wow.
There are guys I do. Don't get me wrong. There are people in this world and who I would love to see struck like that, but I don't have anything against Ellenberger personally on that level. I really wish Ellenberger – this is a little bit of retrospective history – but I wish Ellenberger had gotten with a better camp, you know, years ago. Because if you look at his game technically, he's made some significant improvements over his last few fights. Again, he's lost two of them. But the stance switching against Matt Brown and, you know, actually incorporating a kicking game into his offense. The stance switching here against Perry was very effective. It constantly stalled out Mike Perry's offense and what he was thinking about doing. He clearly wasn't ready for it. Now, again, he adjusted, but it's such a shame that Ellenberger at this point is so far beyond his physical prime that, you know, pretty much any adjustment he can make in his game is just not going to compensate for the years and the miles that have accumulated on him over, you know, again, that amount of time. Because there was a time when...
perform like you got to perform when you have a loss. But
yeah, I don't know who Mike Perry fights next, but man, Mike Perry is kind of like Artem Lobov in the sense that he's linear and maybe I don't think he's as limited as Lobov. I think he's a much better grappler. But
let me think.
He comes to fight and. You're never going to have an easy day at the office with Mike Perry.
At 13, we have Ponzinibbio, 12, LaFleur, 11, Safadine. I think Safadine's got a fight coming up.
Yeah, Safadine's fighting RDA.
Maybe the winner of that fight would be an interesting fight.
I'd be okay with that. I'd be okay with Ponzinibbio. Those two are both brawlers.
Right.
Which would make for an entertaining fight.
Fun matchup. But again, we have some interesting, you know, up-and-coming blood at welterweight. Welterweight's a pretty, I would say, healthy division at the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Welterweight's in a decent
outside,
spot.
Outside of Tyron Woodley being champion.
Again, there's some shaking up that needs to be done at the top, but welterweight's in a healthy place.
Yeah.
All right. On the prelims, Talos Latus defeated Sam Alvey via unanimous decision, 30-27 across the board. This fight sucked. At flyweight, ooh boy, Brandon Moreno defeats Dustin Ortiz via technical submission. Rear naked choke in the second round. I'm not saying Brandon Moreno is going to be a champion because I suck at predicting that. But Brandon Moreno has fought three times in the UFC. He submitted Lewis Smolka, he defeated Ryan Benoit, and he submitted Dustin Ortiz. That's a significant level of opposition, and he has performed admirably. I think he's...
He's 23 years old.
Yeah. He's young enough. I wouldn't be shocked if he becomes a champion. I'll say it like that. His next opponent will probably be... I don't want him to fight Demetrius Johnson next. I think that's a little bit... That's just too much. But, I mean, you've got guys like Juicy A. Formiga, Wilson Hayes, Tim Elliott. You've got tough guys who can test him maybe...
Sergio Pettis.
That's a thought. I mean, we got to see what happens with Pettis and Cejudo.
John Moraga.
Yeah.
Test.
I mean, you give him someone in that, you know... 3 to 6 or so ranking range, someone in that area.
Maybe not 3 to 6. Maybe 6 through 12.
Well, I mean, he's already going to be, what, 9? Or, you know, 8 or 9 after this one?
He's 10 now, and yeah, this will probably put
him
up
9. He was 10 going into
this,
so beating Ortiz will probably put him at 8.
It's a thinner division. It's a thinner division. So... But still, he's only 3 fights into his UFC career, and he's still young. You don't want to put him against Johnson too early, because that could, you know, that could mess him up.
Yeah,
so,
no, you really don't need to rush him that fast to the top, but you give him another tough veteran.
I think Horiguchi maybe got put in there with Johnson a little too quickly, but that's just kind of how the matchups came about, and Johnson needed an opponent, and I think Moreno.
Yeah.
I want to see at least two more wins out of him before he fights for a title.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Scott Holtzman defeats Michael McBride via unanimous decision. 2 30-27s, 1 30-26. This was lopsided. I'm not sure McBride is UFC caliber. Scott Holtzman just abused him all 3 rounds. McBride's a talented grappler, but his striking is just awful. At women's strawweight, Danielle Taylor defeats Jessica Penne via unanimous decision. 29-28 across the board. I don't know if anyone listening to this podcast knows Joanna Jędrzejczyk, but please, if you do, tell her to give Jessica Penne her soul back. Taylor looks like she'd be better suited physically at atom weight, which is 105 pounds. But she fights admirably enough despite the, you know, size discrepancy she's at. She landed good punches. Again, I had this 2-1 for Taylor. Penne's slide continues. She's better when she mixes up her offense, and she never got her grappling going in this fight, so she did a lot of, you know, shadow boxing, and Taylor would slide forward and counter. Not a whole lot here, but Penne needs to reevaluate some things. And on Fight Pass, Alexis Davis defeated Cindy Dandois via unanimous decision, 29-28 across the boards. This fight was awful. This fight was just awful. The striking technique of these two made me want to cry. It was so bad. A terrible fight. At welterweight, Brian Barberina defeated Joe Proctor via TKO in the first round. Guys, do not do the Diaz brother thing where you drop your hands, you know, kind of half at your sides and mean mug. It leaves you open to this. I mean, Bobby Green kind of does it too. Just don't do it. Just don't do it. It's a terrible idea. I don't care that the Diaz brothers do it. You're not one of them. And they shouldn't do it either. They frequently get caught when they do it. They just have phenomenal chins. But it's a terrible decision. Do not do it. He did it. Barbarina cracked him with a right, followed up with knees. Good for Barbarina. Finally, at flyweight, Hector Sandoval defeated Matt Schnell via knockout in the first round. Sandoval got caught in a really tight guillotine. I'm not sure if it was tight. He had to use two slams to get out of it. I think the second one, the first one, bounced Schnell's head off the canvas in a really weird way, because the follow-up blows that finished him are not the kind that should have resulted in that. Like, you know, even watching them in slow-mo, not just real time, but after the fact, like, no, that was a really short hammer fist that got him to, you know, really break the grip and lose his position. And then it was another really short one that just kind of, he was clearly already rocked. But, you know, good for Sandoval. Flyweight's got a couple of, you know, younger guys that are entering into the UFC now that are promising. And I think it's time. I think we need to add his name to that particular list. All right, Jeff, again, that was an event. What from the prelims did you really like? What do you want to talk about?
Brian Barbarina, good win for him. Smiling Sam Alvey wasn't smiling after last night. Brandon Moreno, just man. I won't say he's going to be a champion, but I think he's definitely going to be fighting for the title eventually at this rate. And, yeah, that's about it.
All right. Many thanks to everyone who stopped by, who followed along with coverage, who read after the fact. There were some pretty serious downtime, so I appreciated you guys last night.
Yay.
Much as we all love first round finishes, if you're on a Fox Sports 1 broadcast, it does mean a lot more commercial breaks. So I appreciate you guys being around. Again, always appreciate you guys. You're awesome. I will take you over bigger sites comment board any day of the week, because there's no trolling, there's no stupidity. I appreciate what you guys bring to the comment section, because you actually bring stuff. We've had discussions before. I like you guys a lot. I respect you. I respect your opinions. I like that we can have discussions. I will take you. I'm more than happy to stay on, you know, a slightly smaller traffic site and have, you know, the 7 or 8 of you guys have comments and discussions than be seen by 10 times as many people, but have to deal with all the flame and all the crap that goes on in other locations. So I just wanted to, I appreciate you guys a lot. So thank you for that. All right. Were there any major news items this week, Jeff? I'm not sure.
Well,
nothing off the top of my head, at least.
Well, Todd Grisham was the play-by-play guy last night, and it was his first time doing UFC play-by-play, and I think...
Second.
What was the first?
The Brown versus Lewis card.
He was playing... No. Wait, was he on the desk or actual play-by-play?
No, he was cage side for that one. He and Stan did comment.
Sure?
Yeah.
You're sure? All right.
100%.
Well,
he had that kind of comical get out of there Travis moment when Lewis was teeing off on Travis Brown.
Well, last night he had me longing for Mike Goldberg and John Anik, and I think it's just proof that you don't give John Anik enough credit for being as good as he is at what he does. Not that I've met Todd Grisham. He's a nice guy, and I think he can get better, and I'll give him a chance to get better, but man, just some of the goofy stuff last night was just killing me. First of all, quoting Disney Hercules songs was the first thing. The second thing was during the main event when he said Cub Swanson, Artem Lobov doesn't just doesn't belong in the octagon, he doesn't belong in the UFC. I had my face in my hands. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he's still clearly a work in progress. Again, this was just his second time, and
let's just get Mauro Ranallo. We just get Mauro.
Never. That will never happen.
Let's make it happen.
The UFC would probably. I imagine the UFC would not allow him to pursue all the outside interests he does, and they've never pursued him in the past. They just don't want him on the desk for whatever reason.
You know what? Let's bring back Mike Goldberg then.
Let's not bring back Mike Goldberg.
Why? Why?
I could not. I understand.
Why
I might
prejudice against Mike Goldberg
because he wasn't very good.
You know what? Better than Todd Grisham.
He had more time than Todd Grisham.
You just don't know what you got until it's gone.
Does Grisham need work? Absolutely. I'm not going to pretend otherwise. I have no desire to hear Mike Goldberg broadcast anything ever again for the rest of my life.
Okay.
And I know there are other people out there who liked Goldberg. I know. And commentary is a very weird thing, in as much as what appeals to you, because it's part of your interface with the product. So what you like is just kind of what you like, and fair enough. I'm not going to yell at anybody over that. If you're out there and you miss Mike Goldberg, you miss Mike Goldberg. I'm sorry you lost.
This is a perfect segue, because speaking of Mike Goldberg, there is a rumor going on right now. I don't know how legitimate it is that WWE is reaching out to Mike Goldberg's representatives about maybe having him join their broadcast team to possibly fill the void left by one Mauro Ranallo, Robert. Now here's what is true. 12 years ago in 2005, the WWE did make Mike Goldberg a real offer. He said it was a very generous offer, and he turned it down and stayed with the UFC. And they let him go after a 19-year stint last December. So what do you think about hypothetically Mike Goldberg joining the UFC broadcast team? Not UFC, WWE, I'm sorry.
I haven't watched WWE with the sound on in a while, so I couldn't say what he would contribute from that perspective. There's two things about this. One, again, I have no desire to hear Mike Goldberg broadcast anything ever again for the rest of my life. I suffered enough. That said, I'm not the typical WWE audience member, television viewer, so I'm not representative of what the average person will think. I think
You're
it would be hilarious. I think it would be hilarious, by the way. Just the first few events that he would do you'd almost have to watch for the car crash value. But
I don't think it would work at all.
I have respect for
Goldberg. I just don't think he has the voice or the style that would gel with WWE or the WWE universe.
Storytellers, not hype men, and Mike Goldberg's a hype man. That being said, there's one other thing that needs to be brought up with this. That kind of came up, I heard thrown around by some guys I know who are big wrestling fans and into that, not just as fans, but that one of them is like a partial runner of an indie promotion. So guys who know a lot more about wrestling than I do. In the wake of Ranallo's leaving, somebody said this. If you come from outside the world of wrestling, you should never take a job with the WWE. I mean, here's the thing, and this got I think it was Brian Alvarez who wrote this about the Ranallo situation. The WWE and Vince McMahon reached out to and hired Mauro Ranallo because he was different from what they had going on. He was a very different style of commentator. A respected voice, one of the better combat sports broadcasters ever. I mean, Ranallo has done high-level professional wrestling. He did a lot of Japan stuff, New Japan's. He's done high-level MMA, Pride, Dream, and Strikeforce. I think he did Dream, at least. He did Ryzen over the last weekend. He's done boxing for both Showtime, and I think there was one other. I think he did PBC for a while. I forget exactly. And he's done high-level kickboxing. And maybe he's not individually the greatest, but his ability to speak intelligently and work with a variety of broadcast partners across all those different sports is really tremendous. It's almost unparalleled. He is one of the best.
But it's not something that works for WWE.
No, and my point there was they hired him specifically because he was different. And Vince immediately then hated everything about him because he was different. That is, the world of professional wrestling is several steps removed from reality. And if you do not come from that world as your base, I do not think you will have success there. Mike Goldberg does not come from that world. I do not think he would succeed in it. That said, if he both wants and if he needs the money or if he just wants to give it a try, you know what? Again, I may have suffered, but a lot of people like him, and I have no desire to see him, you know, physically injured. So I wish him, I can't say the best because that's clearly not what I'm saying, but the sentiment is accurate. I do not wish him harm. And if he does choose to pursue it, then it'll be interesting to watch because I do not think that would blend well, but I've been wrong about stuff like that in the past. All right. Anything else?
Well, let me see. I think those were the kind of the biggest. Here's the other business. So it's not official, but the earliest I believe John Jones will be ready to fight for a UFC event would be 214, which is July 29th. I think due to his suspension and all the issues there. Now, let me see. Does the UFC – now, if Jones doesn't take that fight, Cormier would then fight Jimmy Manoa for the light heavyweight title. And I think it's just going to be dependent on would Jones want to take the title fight right away or does he want a tune-up fight first? Granted, tune-up fights, you know, in the UFC, you know, you're never really – You're going to take a risk either way, even if it's a tune-up fight. So,
all I'm saying is with John Jones, there's a top five guy named Volkan Oezdemir who he could fight for a tune-up fight.
Do you really want to risk that, though?
Not a risk. That is so not a risk.
There's always a risk, Rock, because it's still a fight at the end of the day.
Jones would have to injure himself in the cage for Volkan Oezdemir to have the barest chance of winning that fight.
I mean, look at what happened to Muhammad Lawal in Bellator. Right? Did you ever hear of Emmanuel Newton before he beat King Mo?
No, don't think I had.
There you go. And they brought in Mo as their top star to build the company around him as the perfect athlete, as the crossover athlete.
Oh, those were hilarious.
And then
hilarious.
And then they booked him in with Seth Petruzzelli. So I'm just saying, and look, King Mo was one of the, you know, best collegiate wrestlers on the planet. Wasn't he basically Olympic level?
No. Yeah, he was. He actually had, I mean, There's this weird thing I want to kind of look into as far as, you know, collegiate wrestling goes, because there's a shockingly small number relative to the number of collegiate wrestlers that go on to international competition. King Mo did compete internationally in amateur wrestling.
Right.
Which is a world of difference from,
right,
again, collegiate. And he was quite competitive there. He was legit. No, his wrestling chops are legitimate.
But here's the point here. So it's either going to be John Jones versus Cormier, probably by the summer. I mean, I think Cormier, he probably still needs to heal up a little bit. And who knows? Someone could always get hurt. Something could happen. We can never overlook that at this point with these two guys. Or it could be Manoa versus Cormier. So what do you expect will happen?
I don't care. I am so beyond caring about this entire division.
Really?
I do not care. I mean, the fact that John Jones, who has burned the UFC in the past, despite his supreme fighting ability, has all these issues off of a significant layoff. His last performance was, while dominant, somewhat pedestrian in a lot of people's eyes, especially relative to expectation, could then come back and get a title fight simply speaks to how terrible that division is.
But he's the undefeated champion, Robert. He never lost that title.
He never lost it.
Despite you saying that, many people still just see John Jones as the champion. And just, a lot of people don't even recognize Cormier as the real champion. So what do you have
Which
to say
stupid.
About that? You say it's stupid, but that's the reality.
I know there are people out there who believe, there are people out there who think the earth
there
is
are
flat.
There are media members that have expressed this. Like Mark
if Ramon. If that's what you choose to, if you choose to take the linear view of the championship, I understand in part why you would view it that way. It's also not reality.
So you're saying because John Jones because of his personal issues, should not be a contender. Even though he fought last year and beat Daniel Cormier the year before.
I'm saying if you were to put any current UFC champion through the last 2 years that John Jones has been through, any of them, you could take the exact same sequence of events and apply them to, again, any UFC champion, Michael Bisping, Tyron Woodley. I'm going to exclude Conor McGregor from this conversation.
You're a hypocrite. And you want to know why you're a hypocrite, Robert? You never said any of this when Dominic Cruz was granted a title shot against TJ Dillashaw after a long layoff.
No, that's not the same thing. That is not even close to the same thing.
Why is it not the same thing?
Cruz fought on a reasonable timetable. He came back and he smoked Mizugaki, right?
Yeah.
Then he had a minor injury, and then he got a title shot.
It wasn't minor at all.
How many months was it?
Let me see. He fought Mizugaki in September 2014, and then he didn't fight Dillashaw until January 2016.
Oh, gee, I did not think it was that long.
He had another, I believe he had another ACL. He had another ACL.
Okay. Well, yeah. my main point, hang on.
He tore his ACL in his other knee this time, and that's why he didn't fight through any of 2015. So there you go.
Yeah, and the difference here is that let me say this. I don't really have a problem with Jones getting a title shot.
You obviously
comes back
do, because you just said it. You just said you did.
I said the circumstances are what lead to this. How many guys have been stripped of a UFC title for conduct? How many of them have then suffered a second suspension due to failed drug tests and then come back with all that baggage and are immediately given a title shot?
I'd have to go back and look, but I imagine it's probably happened before. And the drug testing thing, I mean, do you really want to hold that against Jones? Because after the whole, you know.
My point is not that John Jones should not fight for the belt. If he wants to, there is literally no one else.
Kind of what you're saying. But the fact is,
I'm just shocked that
the
totality of that circumstance that he created for himself could lead to.
I don't know if the UFC sticks to this, but what they're saying is if they make that fight, it won't be the main event, is what they're saying. I don't know if that'll pan out. That's what the UFC
said.
My thing is, Jones never legitimately lost that title. He never legitimately lost it.
That's very
true. He beat the man who's currently holding the belt, and he beat him in 2015. Okay?
Yep.
And the only reason Cormier is arguably champion right now is because John Jones was out of the picture. So
completely true. John Jones is the best light heavyweight of all time, unequivocally.
Okay. So I feel like, to me, it's not just because of the state of the division, because there is a guy who's ready to step up to fight Cormier right now for the title, and his name is Jimmy Manoa. Do I think he beats Cormier? No, I don't. But there is a guy in line who could fight Cormier right now, who's ready to fight Cormier. So there you go.
I think Manoa's claim for a title shot is another indictment on the division.
I don't think so. Manoa's been a high-level fighter for a long time.
Sure, but he's never beaten a truly elite light heavyweight. I mean, the closest thing he has is OSP.
I mean, but OSP is in the top. He's in the top ten.
I've said my piece about OSP.
OSP has 2 Von Fluchoke submissions in the UFC. He has 8 wins in the UFC.
Yes, he does. And when Manoa fought Anthony Johnson or Ryan Bader, he was comprehensively defeated.
Manoa never fought Ryan Bader. Fought Gustafsson.
I could have sworn he fought. Oh, Gustafsson. He fought Gustafsson and was.
OSP fought Bader. Right, yeah, but I mean, he also beat Corey Anderson, who's another top 10. Or was top 10, at least.
Again, the division's weak.
Corey Anderson was a tough matchup. That was a tough stylistic matchup for him, and he knocked him out. Yeah, it is a weak division, but I'm just, to me, it's not. To me, there's sort of been precedence before, and I feel everyone's still. I think we have to see this fight because everyone still sees Jones as the legitimate champion, whether that's right or not. And I don't think it is right because of all of Jones' issues and just constantly beating himself, basically. And Cormier's been the guy to step up and beat all the other top contenders. So that's why I see it that way. But I still think
if they make that fight, I'm okay with it. I mean,
It's not so insane. Here's why it's not insane to see the fight. Because Jones fought in 2015, beat Cormier. He fought in 2016 and won. So it's not like he hasn't fought in all in 2 whole years. He's fought intermittently, even though he's had these big layoffs. He has fought in each in the calendar years that have passed. So that's why I'm fine with the fight.
Okay. Again, when I say I don't care, that is. A lot of people use that as an expression of mild aggravation. For me, literally, I could not possibly care less if it's Jones or Manoa.
But you cannot
absolutely
indict the whole
no division. Difference.
Can't indict the whole division because of that. If you're going to sit there and then do proverbial backflips for Dominic Cruz when he fights TJ Dillashaw and blows your mind, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Look, had there been a more relevant contender at bantamweight, I might have felt that way then.
There was.
No. Austin Sow had broken his ankle. The primary reason that fight with Cruz came about was as much because Austin Sow was still injured as it was because Cruz deserved it.
He was still the rightful contender, though.
And he was injured, and they wanted to have a fight on a reasonable schedule.
You could have together another fight there, I think. A more realistic fight. But I digress.
Again, if they go with Jones, fine. If they go with Manoa, fine. Hell, Volkan Oezdemir, top 5 guy, fine. I do not care about basically anything that happens in that division right now.
How the hell did Oezdemir get in the top 5?
He beat OSP.
Good God.
He beat OSP.
Can we just put Surkunov in the top five instead? Because, my God.
Make sense. No, all that happened, literally, he won a split decision over OSP. Bader left.
Who is doing
these
rankings? Who is doing these rankings?
No idea. No earthly idea.
Even if the light heavyweight division is as gutted as it is, I feel like we could arrive at a better, even with the UFC light heavyweights, don't you think we could arrive at a more realistic ranking set than having Uzdemir ranked at number five after a split decision win over one of the worst fights ever?
Yes. I believe there is a much more reasonable ranking of just UFC light heavyweights to be had.
Oh, my God. Just looking at this hurts my eyes, Robert.
I know. Believe me. I feel your pain.
Oh, man.
So,
I just have a bad taste in my mouth right now.
When I say I just don't care, that is the God's honest truth about that whole division. I just do not care.
That's what we're looking at right now. If the UFC sticks to their decree of it will not be the actual main event, we'll see.
I don't know. Hopefully, Cormier is pushing back against that, saying the only person he would accept a co-main event slot against is Conor McGregor. That's the only fight that can be above him on a card.
We'll see how somebody's going to cave. And look, we'll see who stays healthy too. Because I mean, look, Cormier is getting older. He's getting older. His nose got busted up in his last fight. He's had injuries as well.
He's had some health problems.
Right. He's had a recurring knee issue, you know, for most of his career. I think what it is that his knee, I think, is missing most of its ACL or some such, is what I recall reading. And so there is all those, and then, you know, going to be able to keep his nose clean, literally, going into the fight. Is he going to, can he even make it to the fight without getting into trouble?
The actual in-cage fighting between those two is less interesting and less entertaining to the general populace than just the drama of will it actually happen this time.
Yeah. It's like you're going to have to, you could probably make some good betting lines over will this fight happen or won't it? Because the first time the fight was matched up, you know, there were issues, there were injury issues that put it off. I think it was supposed to happen. Yeah, as I recall, Jones got injured in practice by Alistair Overeem. And that's what caused the delay there. Unfortunately.
And you had Cormier get injured that led to the OSP fight, and then you had the Jones drug test issue.
I would be fine with Manuel versus Cormier as well.
Yeah, again, any of those guys, fine. This division is in a rebuilding phase, and I don't think it's going to be all that interesting for the next 2 to 3 years. So if they go with Manoa because they want a fresh matchup, or Jones wants a different fight first, or somebody gets injured, fine. If they go with Jones,
mm-hmm.
Cormier, fine.
Mm-hmm.
I am done getting emotionally invested in that entire division. It's too much insanity to be healthy. All right. I think that's everything. We will be off next week as a minor bookkeeping note. The next event for the UFC is UFC 211. That will take place on the 13th of May.
We'll be off.
As long as it stays together, this is a sick card. The heavyweight title fight, Miocic and Dos Santos had a great fight the first time. Joanna and Jessica Andrade is a great fight. Damian Maia and Jorge Masvidal is a great fight. Main eventing the prelims is violence between Eddie Alvarez and Dustin Poirier. It's a top to bottom, it is a very, very well put together fight card.
Yep.
We will be back on the 7th to preview that, so we'll have the 30th off. But yeah, I'm hoping that card holds together. What is it from A New Hope? You know, Harrison Ford's Don't Worry, She'll Hold Together. kind of starts falling apart. Baby, hold together.
Yeah.
But that's kind of me about this card. Just hold together. There's a lot of really good stuff around that card. So I'm hopeful as well. All right. Other than that, what do you got to plug?
So you can check out my review of The Fate of the Furious, still number one this weekend. I haven't heard your podcast yet. Did you like the film?
Personally, no.
Is this franchise out of gas, Robert?
No. They're going to make $1 billion on this movie. There's clearly still...
They're going to make $1 billion, and they're apparent, if the reports are to be believed, they're planning to make a Hobbs and Shaw team-up movie.
I don't know
if that will materialize, but that's what they want to do.
I hope it does. They were the second best part of that movie. The best part was Jason Statham holding a baby, killing people on an airplane.
Right. But no one seemed to care that Statham's character killed their brother, Han, in the third movie. It's like everyone forgot about that.
Yeah. Well, again, narrative consistency with those movies is not a thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, like, for me personally, for my personal enjoyment, it just got too stupid.
Well,
I don't know why it took this long for them to get to that point with me, but they just got too far. And it's like,
okay.
Nope, I'm done.
So Wednesday, I will be seeing a press screening of Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2.
I'm jealous.
So a review of that. I am cautiously optimistic. You know, it's Marvel. Marvel is pretty good at what they do and making just good, you know, crowd-pleasing action adventure movies that, you know, are you know, you like the characters and they're fun to watch. So I'm very hopeful that, you know, it'll at least be cohesive and coherent and as well as entertaining. So looking forward to that. And those are the main things to look out for. So look out for Guardians of the Galaxy. Check out my review of Fate of the Furious. And we'll be back next week. Or I guess
2 weeks.
The week after. 2 weeks so we can preview UFC 211. As you said, hold together, baby. Baby, hold together. Come on.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Robert.
I'll see you then, Jeff. As Jeff mentioned, there is mine and Mark review of Fate of the Furious in the archives here on the Radlichen Broadcasting Network. Feel free to give it a listen. We also argue a bit about the Thor trailer. Because we decided there has to be at least one point on every podcast where Mark and I just are on opposite sides of the fence and disagree. So we agreed on most of the Fate of the Furious, so we found something to argue about a little bit. So you can listen to that. Mark and I will be back to review Guardians. We're off until then. Jeff and I will be back in 2 weeks to preview UFC 211. I hope you'll all come back. I thank you also very much for listening. Until next time, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey, reminding everyone out there to please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.